The Five Secrets of a Phenomenal Business, Chapter 6.
Now we're going to move from marketing into sales, and sales is everything that you do to convert prospects into paying customers. Phenomenal sales converts the highest number of qualified prospects into customers, and a phenomenal sales system is a group of working parts that duplicates results consistently. It's so sad to see so much work go into marketing only to see the sale blown. Small business owners must understand that the sale is not automatic, even when you deliver the perfect prospect in your marketing. You've got to make sure that your sales process lives up to your marketing efforts. A few years ago, on a Saturday afternoon, my wife and I were in the market for our son's first car. As I was browsing a local Honda dealer's website, I noticed a contact form on the site. I put in my cell phone number, and they called me in less than 2 minutes. I was impressed. The woman who called was very professional and courteous and invited me to visit the dealership the same day. Once I arrived, I was told that the person I spoke to over the phone was in the internet department and did not actually talk to the customers at the dealership. Okay, fair enough, I thought to myself. At that point, the worst sales process you could ever imagine began. These folks had phenomenal marketing, but their sales department needed a lot of help. I did buy a brand new Honda, but not from that dealership. Because their marketing didn't work? Nope. Because the salesperson wasn't trained, they didn't know what they were doing, they made it a hassle, and they had no clue. You must train yourself in sales, and you must train your people. When you work hard to generate a prospect or client, don't get lazy when it comes to sales and service. This is where you're going to be able to prove that your marketing message was true. International branding expert, my good friend, and number one New York Times bestselling author, Dr. Joseph A. Michelli, says this: a brand is nothing more than what people say about you when you're not around. In essence, your brand is your reputation. If you make a good impression in marketing, you have to confirm it once you generate a prospect. Every day, small businesses are suffering from what I call the silent kiss of death. The silent kiss of death is when a prospect tries to do business with a company and the owner doesn't even know it. If someone calls your company during business hours and gets a voicemail rather than speaking to a person, you're taking a chance of losing that prospect. Many prospects, like me, will hang up and forget about it or call someone else. It doesn't matter if you have caller ID. By the time you call me back, I'm probably off to other things. If I walk into your store or restaurant and no one's there to greet me, guess what? Some customer types like me are going to turn around and walk right out. The sad thing is that many times, these are the types of clients you want, people who are decisive. I was reading one of John Maxwell's books one time, and he shared a story about when he and his wife, Margaret, went through the drive-thru at Krispy Kreme. They love Krispy Kreme when they're hot, but when they drove by, the hot light was not on. They decided to drive through anyway, and to their surprise, the donuts came out piping hot. When he asked the person at the window why the hot light wasn't on, she replied, "Oh, we get too busy when the light is on, so I didn't turn it on." If you're like me, as a business owner, I couldn't imagine how people could think that way, but they do. It's up to us to train our people. We must train them why it's important to capture as many customers as we can when things are hot, pun intended. This gets us through the lean times. Profitable sales cure all other business evils. We need to close as many sales as possible because we're not only squandering the time, energy, and money that was invested in marketing, but we also want to make sure that we have reserves for the evils that come our way. When we have to pay more tax than planned, something gets damaged, an employee costs us money, someone doesn't pay his bill, the economy tanks, or any number of things that are completely out of our control. My good friend and author of The Facts of Business Life, Bill McBain, says this: planning is not predicting the future, it's preparing for it. When people walk into your practice, your store, your restaurant, or call you over the phone, You want to have an enthusiastic greeting that demonstrates that you're excited to hear from them, and you should be. So have a phenomenal greeting when people enter your facility or call your company. Many years ago, I learned from the Zig Ziglar Corporation that they answer their telephone, "It's a great day at Ziglar." Of course, you might want to update that to "It's a phenomenal day at whatever your company name is." I'm smiling. That's my word. Remember that your callers make several important assumptions about your company when they call. They're listening to confirm that you'll live up to the marketing message. They're making judgments about the value of your service, whether you know what you're doing, whether you can be trusted or not. When your telephone is not handled properly, you can needlessly create a negative impression that now has to be overcome. So let me give you just a few telephone answering tips that you want to use yourself and that you want to pass on to your team. Speak slowly and clearly. Your caller may not be listening closely. Never answer with "hello," even your cell phone. A friend may have given a prospect your cell phone number. And by the way, why do we answer so negatively when it's a personal call from a family member or friend? "Hello?" I don't get that. Next, never allow a child or a family member to answer your business phone unless they're properly trained. Never, ever answer your phone with "Can you hold, please?" This tells callers that they are not important and that you're too busy. Be upbeat and positive always. You may want to use a mirror. The amazing thing is that a smile comes through the phone, and if you have a mirror, you can smile and remind yourself to smile, and you might even want to put on that mirror, smile. Eliminate background noise like music, dogs, kids. This can be distracting, and it takes away from the experience for the client. Ask the caller his name or her name, write it down, and use their name from that point on. Dale Carnegie said that the sweetest music to any human being in any language is the sound of their own name. Have you ever heard that selling ain't telling? Do you know about the power of the question? Did you know that selling ain't telling and telling ain't selling? Have you heard that asking questions during a sales presentation is much more effective than talking about your product or service? Have you noticed that most salespeople break that rule on a regular basis? The last time you bought something, did the salesperson ask good questions, or did he or she do most of the quote-unquote telling? What about you? How are you doing in that area? Have you practiced the skill of asking questions? Have you discovered the power behind asking the right questions? In fact, have you discovered the right questions to ask for your industry? Would you be surprised to find out that the questions are very similar for any product or service? What are the best questions to ask? What about asking a new prospect, "Who do I have the pleasure of speaking with today?" Wouldn't it be a good idea to use their name along with the following questions that are directed toward them? How are you referred to us? What prompted you to call us instead of someone else? What did the person that referred you say about us or the company? What was it about the ad, the letter, or whatever it is that they saw that got your attention? Do you think that asking those questions might give you insight into their reasons for choosing you? You don't want to miss that, right? What if you followed that with, "Would you mind if I share just a little bit about how we do things here and how we could be of benefit to you?" What if you then took about 60 seconds to share how you helped them solve the major challenges that you know they have based on your industry research? Do you think this might help you connect with them emotionally and to position yourself as the credible source? Have you crafted a compelling UEP, a unique experience proposition, that will accomplish that? Is it memorized or written somewhere where you can access it whenever you speak to a prospect? What if you then followed that with a series of pre-planned questions that would not only help you discover their needs, but also help them discover what their true needs are? Did you know that most people don't really understand what their true need is and how not solving it is hurting them worse than they realize? Do you think you could improve the questions you ask? What if you followed the discovery questions with some possible solutions, but you put the solutions in the form of a question? What questions could you follow a statement with? What about, does that make sense? Or, does that sound like what you're looking for? Did you know that by slowing down and asking confirming questions that you can uncover more objections than you would by just running through your benefits? Do you realize that by getting them to say yes throughout the process that they'll be more likely to say yes when you share the investment? What if you could overcome all objections before you quoted the investment? How cool would that be? By the way, what do you do when you get an objection? What if you ask a question? What kind of question? What if you simply repeated the objection in the form of a question? For example, what if the prospect says, that's expensive, and you simply repeated that in the form of a question so you feel that it's expensive? Does it make sense that when you simply repeat the objection, they're likely to tell you what the real objection is? Have you heard that when you quote the investment, the first person to speak is usually the one who buys? Do you make it a habit of becoming silent after quoting the investment? If not, is that because you simply haven't disciplined yourself, haven't understood the importance until now, or is it because you don't believe in your price? Finally, does it make sense that getting really good at asking questions will help you sell more? And how will selling more benefit you? Do you now realize that telling ain't selling and selling ain't telling? Do you know that the more you tell, the less you sell? Did you know that the more they tell, the more you sell? And by the way, did you notice that there isn't one single statement in this section? Now do you know and understand the power of the question? Many years ago, I developed a system that has proven to work in many small businesses around the world. Currently, we're coaching in over 100 different industries in 9 different countries. When you understand and apply the system, you can close more sales. I've seen it work in many different industries many, many times. Through this system, you're also going to confirm that you have the right type of prospect, and you can disqualify the price shoppers. That sounds nice, doesn't it? Step one is to establish rapport and find out how they were referred. The purpose of this first step is to track marketing results, number one. This is the best time to track your marketing stats. When you find out what ad they responded to or how they were referred to you, put that information into a tracking system. This way, you're going to know how many prospects each source is producing. And then when you track your closing rates on a specific source, you can determine whether that source is working well or not for you. If not, you can change the ad or train the referral source. Does the source truly have the attention and trust of your prime target market? These are questions that are going to come from the tracking how people refer to you. If you have a facility, ask this question. Have you been into our store before? Or have you been to our restaurant before? Have you been to our practice before? Over the phone, you would say something like, have you ordered from us before? Have we served you before? Have you used our service before? Number two, you want to build rapport by discovering more about why they responded to the ad or the person that referred them. That opens the door for you to learn more about them. You can then relate to them based on what they say. For example, when they say, my friend Susie recommended you, you're going to say something like, great, we love Susie and we're so glad she referred you. By the way, what did Susie say about us that interested you? That's going to help you learn their motivation. When they share the answer to that question, you may get tremendous insight into why they chose you over someone else. This also gives you tremendous insight into how your prospects make buying decisions, which helps you dramatically improve your marketing. Depending on your industry, you might also ask, what prompted you to call today? Finally, you should understand the emotional reasons your prospects call or come into your store, what's the irritating problem or the exciting opportunity that they are contacting you about? There may be several. Identify what they are and have a list so that during the interview process, you can connect with those reasons. Step two is to connect with their emotional state, to connect emotionally. There's most likely an overarching, broad, big-picture emotion that your prospects are experiencing when they first call you. For example, if you do weddings, what kind of emotions are you dealing with? Well, in this case, you have the combination of excitement of getting married and the fear of something going wrong happening all at once. On the one hand, the bride's excited about the biggest day of her life, while at the same time gripped by fear that someone or something could ruin it all. You may have heard that people always buy on emotion. They justify their purchase with logic. But the sale is really made on emotion. People only buy things because they have to or they want to. The emotion of have to is to avoid pain. The want to emotion is to get gain. One is the emotion of the fear of loss, like buying insurance. The other is the emotion of desire, like getting that new Lexus. To be phenomenally successful in sales, instead of being an order taker, you must connect with the dominant emotions your prospects have. For example, what is the dominant emotion when selecting a service company to come into your home? Fear. Are they going to send someone out that's trustworthy? Or are they going to send someone who's not trustworthy? Be sure to connect with them with a statement like, "We know that there are unscrupulous service companies out there, but we're going to help you avoid those kinds of companies by providing you with the most phenomenal service experience ever, guaranteed or your money back." If the dominant emotion is excitement, like when someone arrives at your hotel to begin their vacation, you want to connect with that and be excited for them. So connect emotionally. Number three is build credibility. Now it's time for you to position your company as the company of choice, to establish trust and believability, to get your prospects' minds off of what they think is most important at the moment. And you're going to start this step by asking a question. "Would you mind if I take a moment to share a little bit about our company and how we're different from other companies in our industry?" If you have a serious prospect, they're going to appreciate this step. Price shoppers don't care. They just want a price. And they might say something like, "Can you just tell me how much it is?" To which you're going to respond, "Absolutely. But I'll need to ask you a few more questions to determine that." Just because they're short with you and want a price doesn't mean that they're a price shopper. They might just be impatient. But rushing the sales process will not help you or them. But you can acknowledge their sense of urgency and promise that you'll get through it as fast as possible. As I mentioned earlier, best-selling author Bob Berg says people do business with those that they know, like, and trust. Your sales presentation is all about building on those three things. Trust is critical. This step of building credibility is all about trust. To establish credibility and trust, use the short version of your 5-point marketing message. You'll share that there are 5 things that set you apart and how those things benefit that person, the prospect. Remember, number one is reputation, which is trust. At this point, keep the 5-point marketing message as close to 60 to 120 seconds as possible. Once you've shared that 5-point marketing message, the 5 things that set you apart, now you've developed some credibility. You've established the reason to use your service over someone else. Now we're going to move into step 4. The purpose of this step, which is perceived problems, everybody who buys something has a problem. You're going to identify their prospect's needs. You're going to truly understand the person's fears and desires, and you're going to define the perceived problem. In other words, it's called lead with need. You're going to identify their needs. Every prospect, again, has some kind of quote-unquote problem. Even if they're buying a new car, it's a problem to them. As my friend Steve McKnight, who's the number one real estate investing author in Australia, pounded on the workshops we did together in Australia. What business is every business owner in? The problem-solving business. By the way, he's very successful. So what problem do you solve? There are plenty of people who offer the product or service you do, so you got to drill down to solve the problem they have. Speaking of a drill, no one wants to buy a quarter-inch drill bit. What they want is a quarter-inch hole. Their problem is they need a hole. They only need a drill bit because they need a hole. If there was a different way to get the quarter-inch hole they need, they wouldn't need a drill bit. Your job as a sales professional is to uncover why they need a quarter-inch hole. Even if you're selling a private jet to someone who already owns three jets, you're still solving a problem. Obviously, the man's problem is that he doesn't feel like he has enough jets, and maybe he doesn't. You need to find out why he wants or needs another jet. This step is where the sale is truly made, because through the power of asking questions, you're going to uncover and identify the prospect's true needs. Many times, prospects don't understand their true needs. They know they need a product or service, or they want something. They may or may not know what they're looking for, and they may or may not know what's going to best suit them. Also, you may be higher priced or different from what they're looking for. So instead of just throwing your offer out there, you want to be in a position to ask questions. Being in that position gives you a huge advantage if you know how to ask good questions, because now you can get feedback. In marketing, you got to tell a lot. You've got to anticipate the objections and try to overcome them in the marketing message. Or you've got to invite them into a sales situation so that you can have that conversation. But in a sales situation, you can now ask questions instead of assuming what the needs and objections are. This is done with a series of good questions. Remember that you're interviewing the prospect to determine whether your product or service is the right fit for them, and you're interviewing them to determine what their true needs are so that you can get them into the right product or service. Let's imagine for a second that you're selling lawnmowers. Instead of just spouting off the features and benefits of all the lawnmowers, leaving the prospect baffled and confused, you would ask a series of questions like, do you currently own a lawnmower? Are you planning on using it yourself, or will other family members use it? How big is your yard? Are there a lot of trees? Have you thought about what you're looking for in a lawnmower? Of course, you would have many more questions than this, but you can clearly see the difference between what I just did and what most so-called salespeople do. The key here is to ask questions and then listen. Have you ever wondered why God gave you two ears and one mouth? Step four is all about solving the issue they reveal, and it's your point of reference from now on. Follow what they say to you with. What I hear you saying is, so it's important to you that, do you mind telling me more about that? Is there anything else that you would like for me to know? I've found that doing this well can even cause prospects to ask if they can go ahead and buy. Why is that? And how cool is that? Because no one else has ever listened to them. They're asking if they can buy from me, and I haven't even asked for the sale. They don't even know what the price is yet. You have to admit, that's pretty doggone phenomenal right there. Step five, outline the solution. Once you've done a good job of identifying their emotional needs and desires, you can now offer the right solution, but not too fast. You still don't get to spew out your features. Sorry. Instead, what you're going to do in this stage is feedback what they've told you in the interview and confirm that they agree with the solution. Here are some rules to follow in this step. Be a consultant. Approach the sales process as a consultant. You've shared your five-point marketing message and positioned yourself as the consultant. You've generated clients rather than customers through experiential and referral marketing. What do consultants do? They ask good questions to determine where you are so that they can give you recommendations on how to get to where you want to go. A doctor asks about your symptoms so he can give you a prescription. A prescription without a diagnosis is malpractice, and it's no different for the sales consultant. Focus on benefits. Be sure to focus on the benefits rather than the features. Features are what the product or service is. Benefits are what the product or service does for them. My good friend John Braun ran me through an exercise I'll never forget called the benefit of the benefit. To drill down to the real benefit, you simply ask the question after each benefit, what's the benefit of the benefit? For example, right now you're reading this book. What's the benefit of this book? Well, it'll help you improve your business. What's the benefit of that? You'll make more money, have less stress, and more free time. And the benefit of that? You'll become a happier person. The benefit of this book is really a better life. Isn't that funny? So use this simple but effective exercise called the benefit of the benefit to make sure that you're really communicating that to your prospects. Overcome objections. Experience teaches us our prospects' biggest objections. If you haven't discovered the biggest objections in your business yet, you need to. For example, when I was teaching in Australia, we presented a Zig Ziglar package that normally sells very well in the United States. The problem was is that I usually present the product with Tom Ziglar, who is Zig's son and CEO of the company. Tom didn't make the trip because Zig became critically ill the day before that we were supposed to leave. Tom asked if I was up to going alone, which I was honored to do so. Unfortunately, Zig's health condition worsened and he passed away while I was in Australia. Although I've sold many Ziglar products on my own, back then, when Tom was in the seminar room, he brought a great deal of validation to the product. Since then, I've sold many, many Ziglar products without Tom in the room. But at that point in time, I did well with the sales, but not as good as we predicted based on the number of people that were in attendance. The seminar sponsor quickly picked up on it, and he asked those in the audience who didn't buy what their reasons were for not buying. He uncovered that some people weren't as familiar with Zig over there in Australia as they are in the States. They felt perhaps that the package was U.S.-based. Objection. Will it work for me here in Australia? He uncovered also that the price was a little high to them. And the one that surprised me the most was they didn't feel they had enough time to listen to all the CDs in the package. Steve and I both knew this package had tremendous value to them, and it was priced at a ridiculously low investment compared to what they could get out of it. So on the plane from Perth to Adelaide, we reworked the sales presentation, and the next day we sold out in seconds. The only thing we did differently was bring up the potential objections in the presentation and overcame them. For example, to overcome the objection that the product was U.S.-based, we pointed out that Zig Ziglar had a worldwide impact on an estimated 250 million people on the planet. We pointed out that people in Australia had been impacted by his work. On the price objection, we simply asked the audience what the outcome of having a proven goal system would be for them. They agreed that by having the systems, they'd be able to make more money, have better relationships, less stress, more happiness, and live a more successful life. What kind of price can you put on that? Speaking of price, we stressed the 100% money-back guarantee and even put a specific dollar amount on that guarantee. Why? Because we both knew that if they used the product, they would reach more of their goals and make more money. There was no question about that. We just needed to present the opportunity in a different way that day. Someone with less intelligence and experience than Steve would have simply assumed that the audiences weren't interested in the package, resulting in low sales. As you're going through the solution, connect the solution back to your unique reputation, experience, education, systems, and guarantee. Use your five-point UEP message. For example, if they say, well, last time we used a service company in your industry, we got ripped off, you can point back to your unique reputation and guarantee. If you do bookkeeping and they say, hey, my sister-in-law is currently handling the books and there's no issue with trust, but she doesn't have a clue what she's doing, you can point to your experience, education, and systems. The next thing that you want to do when you're sharing the solution is get agreement along the way. Avoid overloading prospects with too much information. Closing the sale too quickly can result in returns. Instead, pause from time to time and ask them if they agree with the solution. You might ask, does that sound like what you're looking for? It's extremely important to do this to make sure that you find the right fit. You will overcome many objections by doing this as your prospects help you make adjustments. You'll get the right product or service for them based on their needs. You'll also learn by doing this that there are things that should be in your presentation that are not. So when you ask them, is this what you're looking for, and they give you something that you hadn't considered, you can now think about using that in your presentation. Another thing you want to do is use their language. The best way to connect with your prospects is to avoid technical language unless you translate it into a benefit that appeals to them. In fact, use their words. If you're selling boats and the prospect calls one of the boats the big guy and the other one the little guy, use those words. If you need to reposition the little guy or the big guy, you can do that by using the word and renaming it. Let's say you want the little guy to appear more valuable. You might say something like, did you know that the little guy has some huge benefits such as? The other thing you want to do is use their pace. One of the greatest things a salesperson can learn is the various communication styles that human beings have. Behavior assessment programs reveal that some of us are generally outgoing or reserved, and where people are task-oriented. The system I love is called DISC, D-I-S-C. The D type is dominant. Their style is outgoing and task-oriented, so they're in a hurry to get things done. The I type is the inspiring type. This style is outgoing and people-oriented, so they like to talk. They like to have fun. The S type is the supportive type, and this style is reserved and people-oriented, so they want to know that you care. The C type is the cautious type. They're reserved and task-oriented, so they want accuracy. They want everything to be correct in the world. The D style is fast-paced, get to the bottom line, so you want to speed up. The I style likes to chat it up, so have some fun and lighten up. The S is very loyal, so they want to know that you're going to be there to support them. Reassure them that you'll support the product or service when they need you. The C type is going to have a lot of questions, so you want to slow down, give them lots of detail, let them ask a lot of questions. The D and I style will probably make a decision very fast, whereas the S and the C style will go slower and may not close right away. One of the most important life-changing things you can do is find out what your DISC profile is and become aware of it, because you're probably using your style in your sales presentation. And if you're an I and you're selling to a C, you got to be aware, because you're not going to connect with them. If you're a C, you're not going to connect with an I as easily as you could with another C or an S. If you're a D, or whatever profile you are, you might blow the sale and not even know why. So go to my website, howardpartridge.com, and you can download a DISC profile. You can find out what your actual DISC profile is. And then what you want to do is go deeper, do a DISC profile for each of your team members. If you have clients or members, people you work closely with, you want to do a DISC profile for them. and then you want to go through DISC training. It's very powerful in sales. It's very powerful in leadership, and it'll even help you with your family. I've seen people literally save their marriages understanding the DISC profile system. Step six in the phenomenal sales system process is to share the investment. Did you notice that I didn't say quote the price? It's share the investment. What's the difference between a price and an investment? A price is something you have to pay. An investment gets you a return. The best investments get you a huge return. The more you invest, the bigger returns you get. A fatal mistake that order takers make is not just quoting a price, but quoting it before the first five vital steps have taken place. Can you now see how the first five steps build the value of the unique experience you offer? You want to have the value so high that when you quote the investment, it sounds like a great value. Build the value of the return higher than the investment. This doesn't mean that all prospects are going to automatically buy. They might be hoping to get your phenomenal service experience or your phenomenal product for the same price as what other people charge. They might be expecting to pay more, but they might be surprised how much more it is. That's okay, as long as you have a good closing rate, the number of people who buy compared to those who don't. As the business owner or sales consultant, you need to know the return on investment of the benefits you provide. It's up to us to be able to communicate that. That doesn't mean that every prospect is going to accept that right now. They may have to have some experiences before they come to terms with that. Here's an example. In-home service companies such as carpet cleaners, plumbers, air conditioning companies, cable TV companies are sending people into customers' homes. What's the potential cost of someone with a criminal background coming into your home? What's the potential cost of having someone who damages your property and they don't have adequate insurance? What's the potential cost to fix the problems that they might create? And by the way, how much is your time worth? If they do a lousy job and you have to spend all your time trying to correct the problem or get them to come back, you wasted your money and your time. So the potential cost outweighs the investment. So never share the investment until you have built the value in excess of the investment, that they've agreed that is what they're looking for, that you've shared how your company is different from any other company, and you've shared exactly how you're going to solve their problem. To share the investment, simply say, Mr. Ms. Prospect, your investment today will be. And once you've shared the investment, don't say another word. Have you ever heard that the first person who speaks after the price is quoted is usually the one who buys? I've found that that's pretty much true. You must understand that something amazing happens when you quote the investment. In their mind, they leave and they go to the justification station in their mind. If you interrupt that process by continuing to talk and they get confused or pressured, they might shut down. Or they might feel pressure to buy, which then turns into a return for you later on. That's what we call buyer's remorse. Instead, after you quote the investment, zip it. Be quiet. Don't say anything. And it's going to take some prospects longer than others to justify or reject your offer. That's okay. Just stay quiet. Silence is literally gold. It's literally golden in this situation because it can either make you or cost you real money. In fact, when they finally speak, they might say yes, or they might give you an objection. So that takes us to step seven, which is overcome objections. In the very best of situations, you'll have already overcome all the objections in step five. If not, this is where you're going to need to apply this skill. Did you notice the word I just used? Skill. To be a phenomenal business owner and sales consultant, you need skill. And that requires training. Train yourself and your people with information, books, CDs, audio programs, videos, seminars, and coaching. So here's a rule. When you get an objection, always, 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 always ask a question. Did I say always? If there was ever a time when questions were important in the sales process, it's in this step. When you get an objection, always ask a question. What kind of question? Well, as I mentioned earlier, what if you simply repeated the objection in the form of a question? If they say, wow, that's expensive, you say, well, so you feel it's expensive? Now they have to respond. Remember, the more they tell, the more you sell. They might say, yes, it's expensive, to which you respond with, would you mind sharing what you mean by too expensive? Your goal is to get more information about their objection. There are literally hundreds of closing techniques and questions you could use, so I recommend that you study Zig Ziglar's Secret of Closing the Sale, as well as anything else that Zig produced on the subject. Again, you want to develop your skill in this area. But let me give you five ways to overcome price objections. If you've come all the way to this step, the only objection that you should have is price. Here are my five favorite ways to overcome price objections. Number one, review the value. See, the reason that you've gone through the first six steps of this is so that you can go back to the agreement points in step five. If you assess the market correctly and you know that what you offer is more value for the investment, go back and connect with that. Reconnect with your five-point marketing message. Confirm that they truly want to work with a company that has the unique qualities and benefits that your company has and that they want to get those benefits that you offer. Maybe they're convinced that they can get the same thing somewhere else. Obviously, you didn't convince them of the uniqueness of your product or service and the value, so now you have to do that. Get their permission to explore the other options with them. For example, let's say they're buying a service and they've used your competitor in the past. Ask them this question. Do you mind if I ask you why you didn't call that company that you used before? You have to think about, why do they call you? Maybe you're going to find out that the other company can't service them when they need it, or they've gone out of business, or they can't remember their phone number, or whatever. Now you can ask a question like, why do you think that is? In other words, maybe they can't service you or they went out of business because they weren't charging enough. The question is, do you want to have a company that you can rely on over and over again? If they're comparing you to another competitor that charges a lower price, you want to ask questions that are going to cause them to wonder what that other company is leaving out. What is their true reputation? What kind of experience do they really have? Are they really trained? Can they really truly deliver the experience that you want? And do they stand behind their work? If you're telling me that they can do all of what we talked about for a cheaper price and there's nothing different, you better get scheduled with them as quickly as you can before they go out of business. I mean, really, isn't that just the plain truth? You know it. I know it. You get what you pay for, and companies that charge too little cannot deliver consistently for very long. You must create contrast between you and your competitor and create doubt without mentioning any competitor by name, of course. And you must attract the kinds of prospects in your marketing that you have a chance to close. Don't try to sell a Mercedes to a Kia customer, and don't try to sell a Kia to a Mercedes client. Number two, offer payment options. If you haven't determined what their budget is, if they have one, you want to do that now. You should have done that earlier, But depending on your industry, you might want to put that in the interview process in step four. If not, when you get a price objection, ask this question. What were you planning on investing in this project or this product? If they don't know, it means that they don't have any kind of basis for judging the pricing. They probably just haven't shopped yet. At this point, you'll have a couple questions. Let's say that you can get them to give you a figure. Let's say that the investment is $500 and they didn't want to spend more than $350. You say, well, how would it be if you could put $350 down today and pay the rest later? My experience has been if they really want your product or service, and that's the key, building desire in the presentation, they're going to find a way to pay for it, even if they don't feel like they can afford it today. Of course, you also want to mention that you accept major credit cards. I don't like to help people get in debt, and I'm a big fan of Dave Ramsey, who helps people get out of debt. But I do allow people to use credit cards to pay for my product and services. If I was in Dave's business, I'm sure I would only allow debit cards like he does. If they want your product, work with them on a payment option by first determining how much they can put down today. If you cover your hard cost on the first installment, you haven't lost anything even if they never pay you. If they don't buy, then you may have lost that customer forever. So my goal is to close today. If you're convinced that your product or service really will help them, then you should have a strong desire to close as well. Number three is what I call the downsell. With this strategy, you're going to offer a lower price product or service. You're going to change the scope of the project, or you're going to change the scope of the order. You settle for less money today, but you didn't lower your price. See, if you lower your price without attaching it to some kind of condition, you lose all credibility. In their mind, you could have offered a lower price to start with. Keep in mind that people will ask for a lower price simply because they know many salespeople will immediately drop the price. Don't do that if you want to maintain trust. Let's say you're selling fitness training. You've presented the value of a package that includes X number of weeks and group training and a few one-on-one sessions. You could take out some of the sessions. You're still selling training at a profitable rate. You're just settling for a lower package today. Number four, offer a free trial. In the marketing chapter, I revealed the free trial offer program. Not only is it a phenomenal marketing tool, it can also be a phenomenal closing tool also. Many times your prospects don't know how to value your product or service, and they can't imagine how good it is. Therefore, allow them to experience it for free if you can. If you can't actually give them a sample, create some sort of experience that allows them to see and feel exactly what it'll be like. Also in the marketing chapter, I talked about the free ride that Lexus gives its prospects. Chick-fil-A was the first one to offer free samples in the mall. Now everybody does it. If you have a service company, for example, offer to do a sample service for free. If you have a high-value product or service, you might want to borrow a tactic from the timeshare industry. Have you ever been on vacation and noticed a little booth or office that advertises a free resort stay or free jet ski rental? In order to get the freebies, you have to sit through a 90-minute presentation. And guess what? It works. Of course, you'll leave out the high pressure that comes with some of those outfits that you go to. Number five, this might be an unusual one, but what if you used your referral reward program as a closing strategy? Show them how they can get their entire investment back by using your referral reward program. Just ask this question. Did you know that you can get all of your money back with our referral reward program? Share how the program works, how they get their money back. For example, Mrs. Prospect, we offer a 10% referral reward for any new client you send us. That means once you've sent us 10 clients, you're going to have gotten all your money back on this project. And I've found that people who truly can't afford my product or service many times will work extra hard getting referrals for me so that they can get my service. Again, it's about creating desire for that product or service. In the marketing chapter, I briefly covered that you need to create a sense of urgency in your message. In marketing, you create a sense of urgency to get people to respond. In sales, you also need to create a sense of urgency to close. The reason is that the level of desire can wane after the presentation is over. The emotion dissipates. Remember that all sales are made on emotion. Some prospects won't close right away, and understand the behavior styles and when to close or not is going to be part of your ongoing training. But one technique you can use in those cases is to go ahead and do the paperwork, but put it on hold until a certain date. It goes something like this. Mr. Prospect, I understand that you want to think about it. At the same time, I know that you've expressed interest in the special offer that we have, correct? What if we do this? Let's go ahead and do the paperwork, and we'll put a hold on it for you so that you'll have time to think about it. If you decide not to move forward, we'll shred the paperwork. How does that sound? I've seen this work many times. Your testing will show how many end up canceling and how many don't. By the way, you then work on a suitable date, not next month, and you put a date on the paperwork and ask about processing the payment tomorrow or whenever the date is, if you don't hear from them. You want to avoid having to track down that person. Put the follow-up responsibility on the prospect. Remember, once more, if your product or service benefits the person, there is no harm in working hard to help them. Now, in any business, there's one type of sale that brings the most profit. There's one single sales activity that can make the most difference in the profitability of your company. Not taking advantage of this all-important sales opportunity will cost you thousands of dollars. The most profitable sale ever made is called the upsell or the add-on sale. Why is it the most profitable sale ever made? Because you've already invested the time, money, and energy acquiring and serving your client. Therefore, anything that's added to the quote-unquote ticket is extremely profitable. This makes the upsell the most profitable sale you can make. But the problem is most small business owners don't upsell. Have you been guilty of not making the upsell in the past? I have. Why is that? Well, there are a lot of reasons that I've found that upsells aren't made by the owner and the staff, by the way. Number one, pushy salespeople. You don't want to appear as the used car salesman stereotype. I'll share with you in just a moment that you're actually doing your customer wrong by not offering the upsell, and I'm going to prove it to you, and you're going to agree, so stay with me. Our view of a salesperson has likely been shaped as we grew up. We've been conditioned to believe that all salespeople are con artists. Maybe we grew up seeing salespeople take the discretionary income from our families. You must see yourself as a consultant who's looking out for your clients. The second reason that people don't upsell is fear. Somewhere along the way, we picked up the fear of rejection, and we really don't know where it comes from. When we get confidence through sales training, we have goals, and we have a system that we follow, and we have the desire to reach our goals and take the best care of our clients, we can have the focus to move forward even in the midst of fear. By the way, do you remember the acronym for fear? False evidence appearing real. Your wonderful imagination is creating emotional images. They're almost always false, but they appear real because of the way our minds work. Winners don't lack fear. They proceed in the face of it. The third reason people don't upsell is lack of training. Sales training gives you confidence. If you have staff, they must be trained in sales, and they must be trained in presenting the products and services properly. The fourth reason people don't upsell is they don't have a system. You should have scripts and procedures that are followed consistently. When you develop the right system that consistently works, then it's up to you to consistently implement it. Number five is lack of goals. If you don't have clearly defined, compelling financial goals, you're less likely to do all that you can in upselling. It's a human fact. If your life goals don't require money, hopefully the cost to your client will motivate you to make the sale, which I'll get to in just a second. You may have employees who have not connected their financial position to their financial future, and they might have stinking thinking about money. If that's the case, that's going to limit the possibilities in upsells, and you need to help them expand their money mindset. The sixth reason that we don't make the upsell is we're all busy today. But let me ask you this question. If you don't make the most profitable sale ever and spend your time on less profitable activities, isn't it costing you more time to not upsell? Ponder that for a moment. Now, I'm going to make a bold statement here, and that is that not making the upsell is doing your customer wrong. How is that possible, that not upselling is doing your customer an injustice? Let me ask you another question. If your client doesn't use your extra services, will it cost them anything? If not, you shouldn't be selling it in the first place. There's obviously a gain from purchasing your product or service, so there must be a cost if they don't buy it. Also, if they don't buy it from you and they learn about that product or service from your competitor, how do you feel about that? Are all your competitors honest and ethical? How do you feel about your competitors taking care of your customer rather than you? Finally, do you have a phenomenal reputation? Do you have experience? Are you educated and trained in your field? And do you educate your clients? Do you provide a phenomenal customer service experience? Do you stand behind your product or service? Then wouldn't you agree that if they don't get to take advantage of all that you have to offer, you're actually doing them wrong by not at least letting them know about that extra service or product? It's their decision, but you're the consultant. As advisors, as consultants, it's our job to share the opportunity with them. Next question is, how much money are you leaving on the table? Think about how much you could potentially add to your business every day in add-on sales if you or your people were trained and focused. Now multiply that by 5 days a week. Now multiply that figure by 52 weeks a year. Now multiply that figure by the number of sales or service representatives you have. Just $100 a day, 5 days a week, is $26,000 a year. If you've got 10 salespeople, that's $260,000 a year. And speaking of staff, I do recommend giving them an incentive on an add-on sale. And I know that there may be some purists that disagree, and that's okay if you do. But wouldn't it be nice to give them a quote-unquote raise without having to pay them more just for them to exist? They should be paid on production. Sooner or later, the business isn't sustainable because we continue to give raises without increasing profits. Not a good way to do business. Now, if you want to make upsells consistently, the first thing you have to do is train yourself in sales. This is a worthy endeavor. Get everything that you can from Ziglar on sales training. Train your staff. In fact, Zig always said, everyone in the company might not be in sales, but anyone in the company can cost the company a sale. And by the way, what if the receptionist asks a question like, hey, did you get the XYZ product? It's really amazing. The receptionist can help make a sale. That brings me to the next point. Ask questions. Remember, selling ain't telling, and telling ain't selling. Determine the additional items you have to offer, and in the interview process, include some questions that will reveal the prospect's beliefs about that product or service. Ask questions that bring up the conversation. Here's an example. The first business I started is a high-end cleaning firm that cares for natural stone floors, oriental rugs, and fine textiles for some of Houston's most prominent citizens, celebrities, and world leaders, names you'd recognize. The most profitable and most valuable upsell is sealer for that stone and fabric protector for the textiles. So we built in questions into the script, such as, did you get protector the last time that you had this clean? We don't sell it at that moment. Instead, we gather information. Remember, the more they tell, the more you sell. Later on, during step five, we outline that the solution includes the sealer or the fabric protector. Not having investment furnishings protected costs the client big time down the road, yet many companies fail to even mention it. The result is the customer's property is at risk, and the company doesn't make the profit that it could. The owner doesn't reach his or her life goals, which may include passing on some of those profits to a good cause. Can you see how this all fits together in a phenomenal business? It helps your customer, it helps your team, it helps you, it helps the community. Once you've opened the conversation, ask for permission to share more. Once you get that permission, you can go into a full interview on that particular service or product. If demonstrations or a free trial is appropriate, then offer that. Now, final note, don't offer anything until you've established rapport with the client and you've secured believability. You must establish yourself as the trusted consultant and representative before attempting an extra sale. Many times this is accomplished by wowing the client with the primary service or product first. Speaking of service, next up is phenomenal operations systems.